Today we're going to begin trying to answer the question whether a particular bipartite state is separable or not. Or a different way of asking that question, when a bipartite state is entangled or not. Okay? And I already told you that this is a difficult question, and it will be a difficult question in general, because the problem of deciding whether a state is entangled arbitrarily, if I give you a state, is an NP-hard problem, scales very badly, becomes difficult to actually know. Okay. So first of all, let me define a notion that will be useful for what comes. No? The notion of partial transpose. So if I have a density matrix rho AB, a bipartite density matrix rho AB, okay? So this is the most general possible bipartite density matrix. Okay? I define the partial transpose with respect to B or with respect to A. This is the partial transpose with respect to B, partial transpose with respect to A. Take the transpose only on the Hilbert space on the sector of B. So swap rows and columns if it were a finite dimensional representation, but only for B. Make sense? Definition makes sense? Same thing, of course, you can define a partial transpose with respect to A, which is the same, you just swap A. Okay. Everybody happy with that? Notation. Sometimes you will see, like people, when you do math, sometimes people want to be funny or clever or a mixture of both when giving names to things. So you may find this notation as half a T sometimes, which looks like a gamma, kind of, or an angle, but people do that, like, because it's partial transpose, so it's like T, it's only a chunk. And then it's very funny and so on. I won't do that because it becomes a bit confusing. But just so you know, if you see it out there, if you see a density matrix with half a T, people mean partial transpose. Make sense? Everybody? Any questions about the definition? Hopefully straightforward, but if there are any questions, please let me know. So why do I define this notion of partial transpose, right? That makes no, it doesn't feel like it has much physical sense, no? Because partial transpose, it's gonna mess up with the, it's gonna mess up with the density matrix. You know, a density matrix is a partial transpose, there's not mapped. So, you know, if you take the full transpose, that certainly maps a density matrix to a density matrix, no? Let's remember, a density matrix has to be trace one and has to be positive and self-adjoint. Those are the three properties that it has to have. Agreed? Trace one, positive operator, self-adjoint positive operator. Make sense? If I take a full transpose, still trace one, still self-adjoint, still positive operator. Agreed? If I take a partial trace, that's not guaranteed at all. It messes up the density matrix. A partial transpose does not map positive operators to positive operators. Do we agree? Everybody? It's just messing up with it. Now, that's interesting, though, because Asher Perez, by the way, Asher Perez was a Sephardim. He came up with an interesting idea. You know who the Sephardim are? Those are the Jewish people that were kicked out of Spain at the end of the 15th century. So, many people of Sephardim ascendants, they have Spanish last name, something that sounds like that, so that's Perez. And they actually speak Spanish. There's a language they speak, which is called Ladino, which is the Spanish as it was at the end of the 15th century. So it's very cool to see them talk and talk with them. It's like you're talking with Cervantes or Lope de Vega. In English would be if you're talking with Shakespeare. Only that you probably would not understand Shakespeare because English was very different from now. Spanish was very similar, only just the words used. Anyway, just that was a side note. Perez criterion. Perez realized of the following. If rho AB is separable, right? If I call this, let's use the same notation as here. If it's separable, let's call it Ci rho AI rho BI. If that thing is separable, what is the partial transpose? Well, if I take the partial transpose, say, with respect to B, of rho AB, that thing is going to be, sum of right, CI rho A tensor rho B transpose. Agreed? Partial transpose does nothing to the part of A. It transposes the part of B. Ah, but if this is actually, if the partial transpose in every term here is just a full transpose, it's not changing. This is still a positive operator. If it was originally a positive operator, this is still a positive operator. Agreed? So the partial transpose for separable states, so let me just write here, then means that it's the same as rho AB is separable. Then that means rho T AB is still a positive operator. Agreed? Yeah.
So intuitively, I understand that if we mix up these numbers, something changes. But is there a better way to see why doing a partial transpose does not necessitate the positiveness?
I can give you a counterexample. That's enough, right?
Sure.
So I can give you a counterexample if you want. Get an entangled state, the density matrix of a Bell state, for example, and compute the partial transpose. The partial transpose and compute the eigenvalues, you get a negative one.
Okay.
I mean, I won't do it right now because but I promise I'll get that. So that's enough to say that to show that in general this would not preserve positivity. Agreed, everybody? Okay. So. But what Perez realized is that, in general, this thing will not preserve positivity of the density matrix. But in the particular case that rho AB is separable, it will. Agreed? All right, what does that mean? Well, actually yielded what we call Perez criteria, right? Perez criterion. If the partial transpose of a rho TAB of a bipartite system rho AB has at least one negative eigenvalue, rho AB cannot be separable, so it's entangled. Remember, the definition of being entangled is precisely not being separable. Make sense? Now, of course, this arrow goes that way. It could definitely be the case that in general, that I end up with a positive operator even after partial transpose, and that doesn't mean there was entanglement. This is just, if it was separable, then the matrix is positive. So that means that if the partial transpose has a negative eigenvalue, I know that it's not separable. So it's the logic inverse of that. Make sense? So this is a sufficient condition for entanglement. Okay. And this is a very easy thing to check because it's a problem of diagonalization. Problems of diagonalization scale polynomially with the size of the operator. Make sense? With the dimensionality of the operator. Everybody? So here, for an NP-hard problem, I gave you a way at least to check something that is not very hard. Make sense? Yeah, sure. It's just a sufficient condition, not necessary. But it's something. It's a little bit more than that because if the Hilbert space is, let me write 2x2 or 3x2. That means 4-dimensional or 6-dimensional. So one system or 2 qubits or a qutrit and a qubit. Then the condition is also necessary. Okay, so that means that the criteria here the criterion that is a sufficient condition, okay, becomes also a necessary condition if it's 2 qubits. For a system of 2 qubits, if you take the partial transpose and that thing has a negative eigenvalue, then the system is entangled. And if the system is entangled, it will have a negative eigenvalues in the partial transpose. Make sense, everybody? But again, only for 2x2 and 3x2, not higher dimensions. For high dimensions, still sufficient, but not necessary. So far, so good? Questions? Good, good. All right. So this is nice. This is nice. That was a clever idea. It's actually pretty clever, right? Because it's the things that I call clever are things that are very simple. They're right in front of you, but you know, you have to realize it's pretty clever. It's actually a little bit more powerful even than that, because let me define a notion that I have here, which is called distillable entanglement. Remind me, you've seen already the LOCC tutorial or not? Probably not yet. It's today, yeah. So yeah, everything was moved to Friday, so it makes sense. All right, so I'll just, we have here a word that is LOCC. Have you heard that word before? How many people have heard it? One, two. Okay, LOCC is short for local operations and classical communications. And it's a term that is commonly employed when we talk about multipartite protocols. What can you do? So let me just write it here. LOCC, local operations and classical communication. What is this? So for example, imagine that I have a subsystem and you have another, and we can decide a strategy of what we're gonna do with it. For example, violation of Bell inequalities, right, is something that we can decide in advance. We can decide, okay, I'm gonna measure this, you're gonna measure that, and so on and so forth. The protocol could be a little bit different. We can add more power to the protocol. We can add the ability to create classical correlations. For example, we can have correlated measurements, like, okay, I'm gonna measure my system, and depending on my result, I'm gonna call you on the phone, I'm gonna tell you what my result is, and you're gonna do something that is a function of what I got in my measurement. Make sense? So that is still local operations. I'm not allowed to touch your system, I'm only allowed to touch mine, but we can talk. And depending on what I do to my system and what I obtain when I measure my system, you can do something else. That allows me to create classical correlations. LOCC can create classical correlations. Make sense? We can correlate our measurements and our results. Make sense, everybody? So local operations is pretty clear. It's that I only can touch my system, not yours, and you can only touch yours. Classical communications, we can coordinate. I can do things that depend on things that you do and the results that you obtain. Makes sense? You'll see more of a little bit more in the tutorial, but that's the idea. Everybody happy with that idea? LOCC? Very important in quantum information, by the way, the notion of LOCC. Because LOCC can create classical correlations, but cannot increase entanglement. There's no way to create entanglement just with local operations and classical communication. Make sense? Yep.
If you have entanglement, can you say that LOCC is violated?
No, LOCC is about the protocol. No, so you cannot violate LOCC by having entanglement. LOCC is you're allowed to do local operations and classical communications, whether you have entanglement or not. It's independent of that. Make sense? But LOCC cannot create entanglement, because in a product state, very easy. If I only do to a product state local operations, it's still gonna be tensor with the other part. I'm not gonna be able to create a non-product out of just local operations, even if I coordinate. Yep.
If you do quantum teleportation, then mm-hmm. you have change in a non-local setting.
Quantum teleportation is a protocol of quantum communication, not classical.
But change occurs even if you don't communicate though, right?
And why don't we wait for that question until, because we're going to see in depth quantum teleportation, and we can recast the question then when we see exactly in full detail quantum teleportation. But let me advance, let me give you a perhaps an unsatisfactory answer, but still an answer. Quantum teleportation does have a component of classical communication, but the protocol itself is not LOCC. Okay, as we will see. Make sense, everybody? All right, any more questions about it? is it clear that LOCC cannot create entanglement? Because after all, I'm just touching my own system. I'm not doing any non-local operation. This is what I need to create entanglement, to break a product or a combination of a convex combination of products, to map it to a non-product. That makes sense? So the notion of LOCC, again, is central to the concept of entanglement, as we will see, or at least quantifying entanglement. So distillable entanglement is defined as the number of maximally entangled state of lower dimension, say, is typically Bell pairs. You will hear with Bell pairs. Number of Bell pairs, which means, you know what Bell pairs are? Bell pairs are maximally entangled two-qubit states. The four states that I wrote that were maximally entangled, remember? And the notion of maximally entangled, just recalling, we remember, because maximally entangled states are those that are pure, so full knowledge, but when I erase one of the subsystems, I have full ignorance. Remember all that? So I call distillable entanglement the number of maximally entangled states, and again, most commonly number of Bell pairs, that you can obtain from n copies of rho AB and LOCC. So I give you rho AB. If rho AB has entanglement, I may be able to do some local operations and classical communication, right? And then use another copy of rho AB to end up with a state that has, in a way, more entanglement. That's why it's called distillation of entanglement. So the powers that you have, you can do LOCC. You can measure your system. You can act on your system with unitary operators, with any operators that locally map density operators to density operators. And I can coordinate with you. And we have each one of the parts of the subsystem. And we have n copies. And we should come up with a protocol that gives me Bell states. Make sense? So we call distillable entanglement to, the amount that you can obtain from n copies. And you can see that this definition depends on n, right? If I tell you what is the distillable entanglement of 10 copies, then you tell me, well, maybe it's 1. Make sense? And this is optimizing over protocols. You can tell already that finding this quantity is difficult. Agreed? Because you need to optimize over everything that you can do with LOCC. That makes sense? This is a very useful notion, because as we will see, for useful protocols in quantum information, for example, quantum teleportation, we are actually going to need maximally entangled states, or as close to it as we can. So it is important to be able to distill entanglement. Maybe you are not able to produce maximally entangled states, but maybe you're able to produce slightly entangled states, many of them, and then somehow I can distill the entanglement into something I can use, a maximally entangled state. Make sense? Yeah. The problem is, again, that optimizing over protocols that can do any operation locally and any communication or any coordination is a tough task. Very difficult to optimize that. So this is a very difficult notion to a number to obtain. So Pairs criterion says something about that. If rho AB TA TB, well, let me just write it like that. Negative eigenvalues. Then rho AB has distillable entanglement. Okay, so it may be that you have entanglement, but then for the particular state that you have, you're not able to distill it at all. Well, if rho AB has negative eigenvalues, this is an if and only if rho AB has distillable entanglement. So Pérez criterion is telling you that if you have an entangled state still, but doesn't have the partial transport doesn't have negative eigenvalues, you might as well just throw it out because you're not going to be able to use it to get Bell pairs if your objective is to get Bell pairs. Make sense? So we have a conceptual difference to begin with. Distillable entanglement versus non-distillable entanglement. There is such thing as entanglement that cannot be used to build Bell pairs with LOCC. Makes sense? We call that actually bound entanglement. Mm-hmm. States with only bound, well, with, let me just write it with bound entanglement. With bound entanglement, but positive PPT, which means positive partial transpose, cannot be distilled now. Typically, when I talk about this in front of people, the first thing that comes to mind is like, so can you give me an example of a state with bound entanglement? And the answer I would give you is no, when I can, but not in a lecture. In the notes, there would be a link to a paper that finds bound entanglement, because it's complicated. I cannot just write a state that is simple, that has bound entanglement, okay? They are pretty bizarre states, if you want. Yep.
The number of maximal entangled states, is that an integer or can it be fraction?
It can be fraction, yeah, because what you can do is divide. You do it for n very large and divide by n typically. So you get a density of distillation. Yes, it can be a fraction. And typically you say, oh, 3 EBITs. People call them EBITs, entangled bits. The interesting thing with quantum information is that the lingo kind of varies depending on the subfield of quantum information that you're looking at. So it's not universal. But I mention it, so if you hear it, you know what it means, right? Makes sense, everybody? Good question. So a lot of concepts before we get into computing things, so let's make sure that we get them all right? There is the notion of entanglement, and deciding whether a state is entangled or not is difficult. Now, we found that there's an easy way to completely decide, if your system is 2x2 or 3x2. If that's the case, then, you know, finding negative eigenvalues in the partial transpose is 1-to-1 to being entangled. That can fail in higher dimensions, but in higher dimensions, still a necessary condition. If you have negative eigenvalues, it means that you are entangled. If you don't, well, you don't know. You may or may not be entangled. However, if you don't and you're still entangled, it means that that entanglement actually is not useful to produce Bell pairs. Makes sense? Because it's not distillable entanglement. It's what we call bound entanglement. Everybody happy with all those notions? Huh? Good, good. Any other questions so far? I hope it's, yeah, go ahead.
If you had a large number of qubits and mm-hmm. you took them two at a time mm-hmm. and examined them two at a time mm-hmm. and found no entanglement in any of the pairs,
yep.
could you then conclude there was no entanglement in the system?
We're talking always about bipartite entanglement, that's what I said. There could be higher partite entanglement that we haven't discussed, and we will discuss a little bit. And only a little bit, because when you go to higher partite entanglement, if it's already very complicated for bipartite entanglement, it gets really complex, and the complexity increases really fast. But we will mention it, because we're going to talk about something called quantum discord that will require us to talk about higher partite entanglement at some point. So yeah, you would say there's no entanglement of the kind, if you want, that we have here. But there might be other kinds of entanglement. There is a state where you have an entangled state in the sense that it's not separable, right, of 3 qubits, but any pair, so if you trace out one of them, has no entanglement, it's separable. Okay? So they exist. Huh? And they're very easy to actually write down. Now, if I write this one down, 0, 0, 0, plus 1, 1, 1, right? The state is clearly entangled. However, if I trace out one of the subsystems, ABC, I end up with a separable state between A and B, between any two pairs. So these things exist, an entangled state the entanglement in that state is of very different nature than the bipartite state that we have. But we will talk about that later on when we discuss quantum discord. Okay? Good question. Any more? Entanglement is a fascinating subject, both from the mathematical point of view and from the physics point of view. All right, then. So now that we've had some idea and this Peres criterion on the board, we are ready to try to define amount of entanglement. In a way, there's some idea already here. No, maybe distillable entanglement can be that. Maybe, but not quite, because you can have a. So you can tell, for example, in 2x2 and 3x2, there's no such thing as bound entanglement. All the entanglement is distillable. But in higher dimensions, that's not true. And for a long time, people thought that because finding bound state is so difficult, precisely bound state, meaning bound states with bound entanglement is so difficult, for a little while, people actually thought for a little while, long while, until relatively recently, I think 2 years ago or 3 years ago, the last proof that is completely removed, that indeed, well, there are many layers to that, but indeed that distillable entanglement is not just all the entanglement that there can be properly, like the things that are buildable, that you can actually build states that have bound entanglement. You can, indeed, you can. But it's not clear, right? It's a complicated subject, distinguishing distillable from bound. So what we want now is to build an entanglement measure, something, a number that tells me how entangled something is, you know? Imagine that I create a one parametric family of states. For one value of the parameter, the state is separable, but as I increase the parameter, the state at the end becomes the maximally entangled state, and I go continuously from one to the other. I would expect that the states in between may have some amount of entanglement. It should grow, no? You say a notion, I want a quantifier. It's kind of difficult to talk about a notion without a number that quantifies it, no? So that's what we're after now, defining measures of entanglement. Okay? All right, let's see. This one worked. So let's see if this one works. Apparently not. Okay. By hand then. All right. So entanglement measures. Ow. Okay. That's not nice. All right. Let's proceed the usual way that we proceed when we want to define. Well, what is an entanglement measure? Let's define definition. An entanglement measure is we want a map from, maybe I'll call it E, calligraphic E, from the space of states, the space of self-adjoint trace one positive operators, density operators, to the reals that satisfies and now we give actions, right? That's how we go. I mean, what is reasonable to demand from it? We decide together. We meet together and say, okay. We want something that I input a density matrix, it outputs a number, and that number has to tell me how entangled the state is. So in order for that to be reasonable, what are the axioms that I need to impose, right? The same way that we were doing when we define surprise. What is reasonable for an entanglement measure? I take suggestions. What do you think we need to demand? Yeah?
For a separable state of zero.
Very nice. Maybe I'll write it as two, because in the notes it will show up as two. So, must be zero if and only if the state is separable. Anything else, anybody? That's reasonable, no? Everybody agrees that's reasonable? If you measure an entanglement, if you input a non-entangled state, better be zero. And only zero in that case. I don't want an entangled state to also give me zero. Make sense? Any more ideas? Anybody? What should happen if I input a maxima, because I already know what a maximally entangled state is, right? What should happen if I input a maximally entangled state? Yeah?
One.
Maximum, I don't need to be one, but yeah. Must be maximum if and only if the state is maximally entangled. Make sense? There's a third one. That's the most important one, if you ask me. The most important one is saying that, well, under operations, under the operations that cannot create entanglement, it cannot grow. Agreed? And those are LOCC in particular. Not only just local operations. You know, if I do something locally on system A or system B, I'm not going to be able to map to transform an entangled state to an entangled one, non-separable to a separable state to non-separable. Even more, if not just local operations, if I do local operations and you allow me to coordinate in strategy, I'm still not able because still local operations that I'm doing, right? So this is the most important one, and that's why LOCC is such an important notion. It must not grow, increase, under LOCC. It can decrease, though. I definitely could decrease under LOCC, but I don't care about that. What I care is that it cannot really. You may be able to destroy entanglement using LOCC, but you shouldn't be able to create it using LOCC. Make sense? Everybody? Yep.
But if we have more copies, we can, right? Because distillable entanglement says that. If we have n copies of row AB and we use LOCC.
This is for a density operator.
Yeah. So.
No, but here's the thing. Okay, very important. With n copies of them, if the n copies have no entanglement, you have zero distillable entanglement. What you're doing is distilling, literally, entanglement. You have a little bit in every pair, and you're transforming it into containing it in a single pair, for example. That's distillable entanglement. So you start with zero, you have zero. So no. This entanglement distillation protocols cannot create entanglement out of nothing. Okay? Entanglement is also not an additive thing or the measures of entanglement, so that's why I say must not increase. I'm not telling you nothing about conservation. It's going to be, you know, I mean, we're going to talk about the measures of entanglement. Many of them are entropies. You already know that entropies are subadditive, no? Not additive. Yep.
If you have a beam of light, put it through a beam splitter, you can get entangled flux.
Correct. The beam splitter is not a local operation. Remember, the notion of local here means to subsystem A or B. The beam splitter is acting on the Hilbert space of both A and B, systems A and B. Okay? The notion, when I say local here, it means only allowed, it's the same notion of local as before, right? Only allowed to do operations on A or on B, but not an operation that is not a product between A and B. Make sense? Everybody? So if you want a mathematical expression of, I mean, it could also be dissipative and so on, but if it were, for example, a unitary operation, right? It's unitary operation that are the identity for B and something for A, so do nothing on B, or convex combinations of those, some with a probability coefficient of those unitaries. Make sense, everybody? Everybody understands these three axioms? Do they feel reasonable? And that's it, we cannot demand any more because we don't have more to go by. This is all we know. We only have a well-defined notion of maximally entangled states. We do have a well-defined notion of non-entangled states. And we define entangled states as not being that. And we have a well-defined notion of LOCC. And that's all that we have to go by. Now, what do they feel to you? Do they feel easy to satisfy or difficult to satisfy as written? Do you have any feelings? Search deeply in your hearts. Do you have any feel if this is going to be tough or not? Now, if you ask me, if I were on your side of the room and you ask me that and I haven't seen it before, I would tell you, well, it doesn't feel that complicated, no? We will see that there's actually no way to... We're going to talk about different measures of entanglement. And we're going to see perhaps one or two, if I'm very, very nice, entanglement measures that are actually entanglement measures. And those are the ones that you will never compute because you don't know how. So satisfying these three things, it's complicated. It comes at the price of being extremely complicated and impossible to compute, not impossible, very hard to compute. And that is to be expected, right? Because the problem of deciding if a state is entangled or not is NP-hard. Imagine that I tell you that the measuring the amount of entanglement is not NP-hard. Well, it has to be. Because the problem of deciding if a state is entangled or not can be phrased in terms of entanglement measure as deciding if the entanglement measure is zero or not. So of course, entanglement measures are going to be extremely tough to build, satisfying these three things. Make sense, everybody? Okay. Is that the feeling you had in your hearts? No? I'm gonna keep trying to elicit some feelings. Let's see how successful I am by the end of the course. All right, so we begin. Let's begin with, maybe I'll do it in a new board. Let's begin with perhaps the most famous thing, to call it something, the entanglement entropy. This board?
Just for completeness, it's epsilon is positive definite, right?
This map, typically, I don't really require that to be. I mean, maybe it's just, well, if I say zero, yes. Oh, sorry. I mean, what I mean is that you can, and maybe let's add it positive, semi-definite. If I had written must be minimal, which is what I actually had in mind instead of zero, then it doesn't matter, but yeah, sure. Keep in mind that to be extremely rigorous with it, you don't need it to be zero, just minimum, right? So there's no need to demand it's positive semi-definite, but from a one that's not positive semi-definite, you can always build a positive semi-definite by adding the minimum, right, to it.
So the difference of entanglement matters.
And it's very interesting. You will see, like, the entanglement measures do not order the states, meaning that even though the maximum and the minimum have to be the same, in between, maybe two different measures of entanglement may disagree on which one is more entangled. So it's so, so deep, this thing. So, yeah.
Do you know, like, how many different such functions you need to have a complete... To know, this state is more entangled than this other,
because... No, the answer is that there's no such... The notion is not an orderable body of objects. It's not an orderable set. If you have a state that is maximally entangled and a state that is not in between, it's very difficult to decide. States that are very close in entanglement, it's very difficult to decide which one is more entangled. And that's also reflected in protocols, right? Because if you have a protocol that that gives you... you use that entanglement for something. Some protocols may like one better, and some other protocols may like the other better, depending on what you want to do with it. It's just a difficult problem. We will see one measure of entanglement, at least, where the ordering makes a lot of sense, okay? But what I'm telling you is that different measures of entanglement may disagree on the order. Yeah. Bindiya first, yeah, sorry.
Couldn't distillable entanglement use to order? Like, if you're able to use less copies to...
Distillable entanglement is one of those, same as entanglement of formation, but that's it. Those are the difficult ones to compute. And in fact, again, for a long time, the thing that was not decided is whether distillable entanglement and entanglement formation were the same thing or not. They're not. And they may disagree in between each other, but they make a lot of sense, both of them. Yeah, good, good, yeah.
So does this mean the number of maximally entangled states has to be computed by considering all possible ways of obtaining those states in order to find out which one of these approaches gives you the maximum?
I'm not sure I understood the question, sorry. Can you repeat it?
If you have different orderings, so different values, using different approaches, then to find the maximum number of entangled states, fully entangled states, you see...
The maximum is the same for all measures of entanglement, though.
The maximum is, but if you've got fractional entanglement, different approaches for computing it, does this mean you have to consider the different approaches in order to solve the question of what is the maximal number of entangled states?
The maximal number of entangled states is well defined as a mathematical problem, which is what are the families of states that when I trace one, pure states, that when I say pure states, things simplify a lot. What are the pure states such that when I trace one of the subsystem, I get a maximally mixed state? And that's an easy problem, actually. That scales easy. So no, determining the maximally entangled states is not difficult. I don't know if that's determining what they are. Okay. For example, for two qubits, it's just the four Bell states. And for any dimensions, I can build the equivalent to the Bell states. Make sense, everybody? Okay. So let's begin with the entanglement entropy, and then we can discuss whether it's a good name or not for it. So this is entropy of a pure bipartite state is the, well, rho AB, let's call it. Or it's pure, so I can even call it, or maybe for consistency, I can call it rho AB equals projector over some vector. All right. Is the von Neumann entropy of either of the partial subsystems . So, entanglement entropy of a state psi AB is defined as the entropy, the von Neumann entropy of trace over A on B. Is it proof? Maybe do it as an exercise. Time and entropy is symmetric. That's even if A and B have different dimensions, huh? A and B, A could be the subsystem, A could live in a Hilbert space dimension 2, and the subsystem B could be in a Hilbert space dimension 200, still symmetric, this thing. Make sense? All right. Now, the entanglement entropy. Man, what a beautiful thing if it were an entanglement measure, because this is literally the definition of entanglement that we work with words, no? Entanglement entropy is telling you, well, I have a pure state to begin with, so zero ignorance, and entanglement entropy is literally the amount of ignorance that you have when you erase one of the subsystems. This is the one that directly connects to the physics of entanglement, or the information theoretical core of entanglement. Make sense? Sadly, we have a problem with it. The problem is that, oh, this is all nice if you originally knew the state, if it's a pure state to begin with. If you have a non-pure state, then when you trace out one of the subsystems, you end up with ignorance, and you have no clue where the ignorance came from. Agreed? It could be the original ignorance. Again, example. Let me just write problem. I mean, we did examples, but let's do another problem. It dramatically fails to measure entanglement in non-pure states, or for non-pure states. Example. Rho AB, it's equal to, look at this, the most horrible state, the maximally mixed state for the two systems. I know nothing at all about the state. This thing is the most separable it can be. It's a product. Agreed? Very non-entangled. The opposite to entangled. Lives on the other side of the universe, from in the universe of entanglement. Well, rho A, which is the trace over B of rho AB, what is that? Well, this is the identity in A. So the von Neumann entropy of trace A rho AB is the maximum of the von Neumann entropy. Agreed? It's the maximally mixed state, the highest entropy you can have. I know nothing about the partial state. Yeah, you know nothing, but it's not because of entanglement, it's because you knew nothing to begin with, so what would you expect? See what I mean? So the entanglement entropy, even though it has this catchy name, and also connects directly to the core of what entanglement is for pure states, it fails dramatically for mixed states. So if somebody, for example, somewhere ever tells you that, I don't know, you're in space-time, and they say, ah, I have a region of space-time here, and I have a region of space-time here, and I'm computing the entanglement entropy between these two, you can say, well, for what? That's not even entanglement or anything, so what do you mean? Agreed? Because these two regions, this region is entangled with this complement, so if you are computing entanglement between a region of space-time and its complement, that's fine, because the whole state is pure in a vacuum state of a theory, right? Which is pure. But if you're computing entanglement between two finite regions that are not complementary, don't ever use the entanglement entropy. I don't think it happens anymore, but 10 years ago, oh my God, it used to happen. People would use other things now, so we're fine. Some of them we're gonna see as well. Is that understood then? Understandable and understood? Entanglement entropy, great for pure states? It's the perfect entanglement measure if only all states were pure. It so happens that actually all states are non-pure. Like anything that you have in a lab is not going to be a pure state. You can get close, but not in general, it's not. So this thing, the entanglement entropy, let's look at this. Which one of these axioms does it satisfy, if any? Let's say three. Must not increase on the L of, let's start from one. Must be maximum if and only if the state is maximally entangled. Is that true?
No.
No, because I gave you a separable state and it's maximum still. Must be zero if the state is separable and positive semi-definite.
No.
No. Again, same counterexample. Three, must not increase on the LOCC. Also, no. I can mix one of the subsystems by decohering it. So, yeah, that's not ideal. Make sense? If I do unitary LOCC, sure, it is true. But if I allow things to interact with the get entangled with something else. So this one is opinable, if you want. But definitely one and two are violated badly. Make sense, everybody? Any questions? Did you know the entanglement entropy from before? Anybody knew it? Perhaps it's the typical entanglement measure that some people know already from home. It's the entanglement measure that you can pick on the streets, right? All right. But we already saw that this is not an entanglement measure. Sad, right? Because it's beautiful, though. It is beautiful. If it were, it's like the amount of ignorance that you get. I had a very clever question last year when we were saying that, and somebody asked, can we maybe somehow, you know, if you have a separable state, something like this, right? If you have that, come on. Well, you can write this, man, let's say in general non-separable, you can write this as, you know, some coefficients, right? Or maybe even like that, you might be able to get, yeah, because this is a basis, right? So no, it doesn't matter, like that, it's fine. And it's like, maybe there is something about the entanglement entropy of each of the components or something. You know what I mean? Like, if you decompose it in a way like that, can we say that the entanglement entropy of each of them somehow give you? That was a very clever question. And we will see if that leads anywhere. But as presented, certainly the entanglement entropy is not great. Agreed? It is great for pure states, but that's it. Any questions? All right, let's address that question now. That's the last one we do today. Entanglement of formation. Oh, by the way, something I forgot to ask. Is the entanglement entropy easy to compute? Opinions?
Yes.
It is very easy to compute. It's a diagonalization problem again. Agreed? Anything that's a diagonalization problem, it's easy to compute. Polynomial. Make sense? All right. Entanglement of formation. So the entanglement of formation, as the this is the answer to the question. So let's look at distillable entanglement. For distillable entanglement, we ask the question, how many couples, so in a way is given n copies of a system that has entanglement, right? How many do I need in order to build a maximal entangled state? The entanglement of formation is the answer to the opposite question, in a way. It's how many bell pairs do I actually need in order to build the state that I have? Make sense? The opposite question. Let me put it like that. So imagine that I have a decomposition of the system like this. Stochastic combination. Let me put it up here. Okay, mind that I find, this is a basis, so I can do it. A stochastic, well, it doesn't have to be a basis, actually. It doesn't have to be orthogonal, even. A stochastic decomposition of rho in these kind of states, states that are bipartite. Okay? And then we can say, well, we can define a notion of expectation or average, right? Mean. Maybe, what should call it? Yeah. Mean entanglement entropy that depends on rho AB, of course, the state. And this thing is sum over I, PI, entanglement entropy of psi I AB, right? We could do that. That actually was the clever idea that one of the students had. Why don't we use, you know, find a decomposition of the density matrix as sum of pure, you know, a convex combination of pure bipartite state, probabilistic combination of that, and define the average entanglement entropy like that. Right? Does it feel like a good idea? No, why not? Why not? Yeah.
Because there's multiple ways you can represent the density matrix using the pure states.
That is correct. There are multiple ways. And imagine that you find one where the individual states have a lot of entanglement, but then somebody finds another where the individual ones are separable, are product states. Then is there state entanglement or not? I would say no. The moment that you can write it in a way, if it admits such a decomposition, such that the states are separable, then certainly this is not going to be an entangled state. Make sense? Is that understood by everybody? I don't know. The cannot tell from your faces. You're difficult to read as an audience. If I find a decomposition like that into very entangled states, each of them, I'm going to have a high value of the average entanglement entropy. But maybe my neighbor finds another decomposition, because there's many ways of finding this decomposition, as pointed out by Ian, right? There are many ways of doing this. And perhaps one of them is separable. And that's all that it takes. If I have one that is separable, if this thing can be written as a complex combination of separable things, it's going to be a product. It's going to be a separable, sorry. Make sense? Everybody, so you just need to find one. You just need to find one for which it's a complex combination of product states, and you're done. There's no entanglement. Yes?
Could you write a minimum in front of this?
Precisely. And that is the entanglement of formation. Very good. So we build the entanglement of formation together. Well, Ian built it, but as the spirit of the class here. Make sense? Let me define the entanglement of formation. Entanglement of formation of rho AB is defined as the infimum for PI psi IAB, sum over I, PI, entanglement of formation of the pure state AB. And I also complement that by saying that the entanglement of formation of a pure state, it's equal to the entanglement entropy. So I could have written entanglement entropy here, but for generality. Entanglement entropy. So the definition, this is just notation. I could have written here, obviously, entanglement entropy for a pure state, but let me write it like that. So indeed, what we say is that, well, it only takes to find one decomposition like that into product states in order for it not to be entangled. So maybe defining as the minimum possible amount of average entanglement entropy makes sense. And this is precisely the definition of entanglement formation. It so happens, also, you can prove that this definition is precisely telling you if you use for the entanglement formation, for the entropy, it's a log 2, that actually tells you the average number of maximally entangled qubits, pairs of qubits, that you need to build the state as well through LOCC. Any questions about this? You see, at least hand wavily, that this makes sense. Oh, question, sorry.
Sorry, what's out front of that definition? I am...
Sorry, the infimum. Think of the minimum.
Okay.
Yeah, just to be a bit precise. All right, makes sense? So you have to minimize over all possible ways of writing this. So the space of minimization is the PIs, but also the vectors. And then get the minimum of that, and then compute the average entanglement entropy in that decomposition. Yes?
How hard is it to write an algorithm to go across all of the way?
Extremely hard. In fact, computing this is an NP-hard problem. Now, nicely enough, this thing satisfies the three axioms. The moment that it satisfies the three axioms, it's going to be NP-hard to compute. Otherwise, we solve, imagine, if you find an entanglement measure that is easy to compute and satisfy the three axioms, we've solved P versus NP in the way that nobody expects. Because we proved that NP is equal to P. And we are millionaires, literally. Oh, you get $1,000,000 if you prove it. That's why.
Who do you get it from?
The Hamilton Foundation. I forget. Oh. So there's a non-profit that gives you Hilbert Foundation. It's one of the Hilbert problems, and that's why. The Millennium, they call it now Millennium Problems, I think. Because they added a couple more, because some of them were solved, right, of the original Hilbert problems. Any questions about that? It's a really nice, this is also, as we will see, it's very physically nice as well, because this is the generalization of the entanglement entropy. You see, it is actually the entanglement entropy for pure states, and it's the average entanglement entropy that you have for all the components for non-mixed states. This is connecting with the physics of information. This is the natural generalization of the entanglement entropy as an entanglement measure for mixed states. Make sense, everybody? Very nice measure, if only we were able to compute it. Any questions? Vindija, remind me, in the tutorial today, do they use negativity or not?
Negativity
as an entanglement measure. No, okay, so it's fine. We can kind of stop here because it's basically the time. I was thinking that if they used it, I should add it. So before we go, a quick recap. We established, or we are looking at the question whether I can tell if a state is entangled or not. this is extremely important from foundational point of view, but it's also extremely important from the applied point of view, because maybe I want to do protocols quantum information that consume entanglement as a resource. In particular, the one that I want is this kind, the one that can be amplified through distillation, because that's the one that I can effectively use in a lab with a distillation protocol. Well, there's this person, Perez, that told me, like, well, look, there's an easy way to see a necessary condition for entanglement. If you take a partial transpose and that's still a positive operator, and that is not a positive operator, then the state is entangled. And for 2x2 and 3x2, that's actually sufficient and necessary. Nice. But then you say, okay, what about higher dimensions? Well, higher dimensions is a difficult problem. Can we have a quantifier of entanglement? Yes, we can. I mean, we can at least want to have it. And what is a quantifier of entanglement? Well, whatever function from rho to the reals that satisfies these three actions, right? That is what we call entanglement measures. First candidate, entanglement entropy. It's nice because it connects directly with the notion of entanglement physically. How much ignorance do I get about, if I know everything about A and B, how much ignorance about A do I get when I erase B? Very nice. Sadly, this thing fails. Fails all the axioms, or these two egregiously, and this one with a parenthesis. Okay? But then you say, okay, this is very nice. Can I actually use it, generalize it for mixed states while keeping the physics of it? As in, well, how about finding the compositions into bipartite pure states and then talking about the average entanglement entropy in that state? Yes, but there's a problem. There's infinitely many ways of doing this, right? So we have a little problem there. But if I find one of those that there's entanglement, would it work? Like, no, not really, because if I find another one where they're products, it would be no entanglement whatsoever, obviously. Okay, fine, but then what about the minimum? That's literally the route that Ian took. What about minimizing that? And the answer is yes. If you minimize that, you do get an entanglement measure that satisfies all the axioms. The price you pay is that you cannot really compute it in practice, even for very low dimensional systems. This optimization is very tough. So we better have something else, no? That we can compute. And it's also closer to a measure of entanglement than the entanglement entropy is. All right. Cool. So I'll see you on Monday then.